Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Tatenu kampam suksamikshamano munjana yevatma kritam vipakam hridvag bapurbir vidadham namaste jiveti yo mukti padhe sadhayaba. And instead it says when good things happen, as Prabhupada mentions elsewhere, I think in the Bhagavad Gita, then one thanks the Lord for making it easier for him to do his or him or her to do their devotional service. And when and this verse, when things seemingly, as we were hearing from Maharaj, seemingly bad things happen to us, we thank the Lord. And we actually thank him for minimizing it. And that's why Mukti Pade Sadhaya Bhak. That's why if we can adopt this consciousness, our ticket back to Godhead is guaranteed. Because this verse explains how it cuts at the root of our material existence. It cuts at the very root of our material existence, that envy, that blaming Krishna for things that happen to us. And the devotee who actually can adopt this consciousness attains such a freedom. It's such a relief from the heart when that envy goes away and one actually adopts the right attitude towards the Lord. So bad things happen, and what do we do? Not only even, not just with our, you know, yeah, that's the right thing to do, kind of, I remember Maharaj was talking about this the other day also, that, you know, it can be here or it can be here. And there's a big difference between what goes on in the head and what goes on in the heart. We talked about that yesterday also, about prayers, that you can talk about prayers, you can talk about how you should pray, that's kind of here, and then here is actually doing it. Right? So here, with one's heart, with one's words, with one's body, vidadham, offering namaste, thanking Krishna for punjana yevatma kritam vibhakam, for all these lousy things that are happening to us that we created and that he kindly has minimized, and is also, as we talked about yesterday, taking those karma, we could say, and giving us so many lessons through those. And then here's the result. Here's like the fall, the fruit of what happens if we can adopt that consciousness. Jiveta, lives. Yaha, anyone who. So anyone who lives like this, Mukti Pade, to the position of liberation. Saha, he. Dhyabak, the rightful heir. So he attains Krishna, as we know from the discussion with Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and Lord Chaitanya on this very verse, on this point about Mukti Pade, right? Because what was it? Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya didn't like that word Mukti. And then Lord Chaitanya explained, no, it's, in this verse, it's synonymous with Bhakti. My dear Lord, one who earnestly waits for you to bestow your causeless mercy upon him, all the while patiently suffering the reactions of his past misdeeds and offering you respectful obeisances with his heart, words, and body, is surely eligible for liberation, for it has become his rightful claim. And this is a purport by Sri Dayananda Maharaj. Srila Sridhar Swami explains in his commentary that just as a legitimate son has to simply remain alive to gain an inheritance from his father, one who simply remains alive in Krishna consciousness, following the regulated principles of bhakti yoga, automatically becomes eligible to receive the mercy of the personality of Godhead. In other words, he will be promoted to the kingdom of God. This is one of those kind of, it's actually interesting, it's a kind of a feel-good verse, But at the same time, so I love talking about our suffering also. So it's like chutney, right? Right? Yeah, a little like that. The word sukshamikshamana indicates that a devotee earnestly awaits the mercy of the Supreme Lord, even while suffering the painful effects of previous sinful activities. So we suffer, and we eagerly expect, even, that's the word that's used in the Nectar of Devotion, expect Krishna's mercy. Now, how it comes, that's up to him. And it may not come the way we, you know, it may not come in the form of sweet rice and, you know, whatever. But it's, Lord Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita that a devotee who fully surrenders unto him is no longer liable to suffer the reactions of his previous karma. However, because in his mind a devotee may still maintain the remnants of his previous sinful mentality, this answers that question that one of the Prabhus sitting here yesterday asked. However, because in his mind a devotee may still maintain the remnants of his previous sinful mentality, the Lord removes the last vestiges of the enjoying spirit by giving his devotees punishment that may sometimes resemble sinful reactions. The purpose of the entire creation of God is to rectify the living entity's tendency to enjoy without the Lord. And therefore, the particular punishment given for a sinful activity is specifically designed to curtail the mentality that produced the activity. That's a nice point to preach about, right? Because I know, I'm sure sometimes when we're out preaching, people ask, well, if we can't remember our previous lives and the activities that caused this reaction, then what lesson, where's the lesson? Have you experienced that as a preacher? Sometimes people ask you that? Yeah. So this is a, I don't know if they'll accept it, but this is one one reply to that. Let me see if I can read that again, if I can find it. I need to get those new glasses from Harivamsa Prabhu. Oh, yes. And therefore, the particular punishment given for a sinful activity is specifically designed to curtail the mentality that produced this activity. Although a devotee has surrendered to the Lord's devotional service, until he is completely perfect in Krishna consciousness, he may maintain a slight inclination, or in my case, it's not so slight, to enjoy the false happiness of this world. The Lord therefore creates a particular situation to eradicate this remaining enjoying spirit. This unhappiness suffered by a sincere devotee is not technically a karmic reaction. It is rather the Lord's special mercy for inducing his devotee to completely let go of the material world and return home back to Godhead. A sincere devotee earnestly desires to go back to the Lord's abode. Although that's always an interesting one, right? Yes, on one hand, you know, because we sometimes hear Mama Jamini, Jamineshwari, you know, I'm willing to take birth again and again, right? And one time when I think it was Tripurari Maharaj said that to Srila Prabhupada, I'll just take birth again and again to distribute your books. Prabhupada was very happy. So then Burijan Prabhu had heard that. Did he? I don't know if he told this story. So he went to Srila Prabhupada and said, Srila Prabhupada, I'm just ready to birth after birth to be your servant and to serve your mission. And Prabhupada looked at him very seriously and he said, don't make me come back to save you. So there's two ways, you know. So in other words, that's a very, very deep spiritual sentiment to be willing to just suffer birth after birth. And if it's not really a deep realization, it's, you know, that was what Prabhupada was. Therefore, he willingly accepts the Lord's merciful punishment, the key word here being willingly, willingly accepts the Lord's merciful punishment and continues to offer respects and obeisances to the Lord with his heart, words, and body. such a bona fide servant of the Lord, considering all hardship a small price to pay for gaining the personal association of the Lord, certainly becomes a legitimate son of God, as indicated here by the words, Dhyabak. Just as one cannot approach the sun without becoming fire, one cannot approach the supreme pure Lord Krishna without undergoing a rigid purification process, which may appear like suffering, but which is in fact a curative treatment administered by the personal hand of the Lord. We can chant together. Om. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to review the first six points that we discussed yesterday, and then discuss the last two. So we first talked about rest or solace or shelter, and how it's so important when difficulties come in our lives that we find that shelter, that rest in the correct place, and that it's not linked to external circumstances. Our financial stability, our abilities, our intellect, our strength, our beauty, the family that we come from, so many of these things that we kind of latch onto, that's not where our strength ultimately comes from. Rather, obviously, our strength lies somewhere else. And then we talked about circumstances, and that when things seem out of control in our lives, we tend to want Krishna to do what? Anyone remember? Yes, change, right? Change the circumstances. Now, of course, I just wanted to make a clarify here, because we have a lot of, you know, devotees who manage either the temple or they're preaching. This doesn't mean in day-to-day management that you don't, you know, sometimes you have to go through all this to make a simple decision. But rather, you know, this is specifically, of course, talking about when really put into the test by the Lord. So our tendency is to want to adjust the material's circumstances. That's kind of like in the 13th canto, 13th canto, yeah, right? You haven't read that yet? The 13th chapter of the first canto. Because Dhritarashtra, that's what he did his whole life, right? Because he was, even though he wasn't literally the king, he lived the life of a king, so many comforts. And if it was a little too hot, someone could fan him. If he was a little hungry, someone could even put grapes into his mouth. I mean, you know, the kingly life was full of so many little adjustments that could be made for one's comfort. And that was kind of the point that Vidura, right? Vidura? Yes. Vidura was making to him. You know, external changes, hogya. You know, you can't, your teeth are falling out, your liver is defective, you've been blind from birth, you know, you're 80% finished. You know, get real. Right. But we don't necessarily have to wait till we're, I don't know how old, does anyone know how old Dhritarashtra was at that time? He was elderly, however it was. Because these kind of situations that the Lord mercifully puts us in helps us also to understand that there's something beyond the external circumstances that we're going through here. And that's really, really important. You know, otherwise it's just you against the external circumstances. Maharaj was talking about us. What was it? Us fighting Hiranyakashipu without devotion. Yeah, good luck, right? So it's a little bit like that. And one feels, and I'm sure we all have this experience, smartavya satatam vishnu vismartavya najatuchit, that when we do remember Krishna and we do take shelter of him, the heart, the mind, everything, it changes. And we become a different, our consciousness changes. So we have to abandon the notion that our external circumstances have to change for us to be happy, for us to be satisfied, for things to go right again. They may not, that's up to the Lord, but the thought that they have to, that's illusion. And that will only create one thing, it's called anxiety. What if they don't change? And who's in charge of them? Certainly not us. Right? So just, you know, so anytime the one definition of anxiety is you want to change something and you can't. That's a very good definition of anxiety. So then the third point was about taking shelter of the process when difficulties arise. And we talked about meditating on two aspects of Krishna. Power, his power, and his inclination to his devotees. Regarding inclination to his devotees, how do we first see Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita? Yeah, what's he doing? Yeah, he's actually taking an order, isn't he? Senayor ubayor madhye, right? You know, I don't know, I wasn't there. But it doesn't even sound like, you know, senayor ubayor madhye, please Krishna. It's more like an order, right? Isn't it? You know? Cello! You know, Krishna, you're my driver, get going. So Krishna is serving his devotee. And what's very interesting is what, I don't know if anyone remembers this, probably some of the devotees do. Where is the first time we see Krishna in the Bhagavatam? Actually, you know, the person Krishna doing some activity. Huh? Oh, did he? Well, like guru, like disciple. But no, you know, there's a big difference between the two. And what was the answer? Krishna is driving the chariot, chasing after Ashwatthama, right? And then right after that, Krishna is protecting Parikshit Maharaj in the womb. And then right after that, I mean, just go through the Bhagavatam. If we went through the Bhagavatam, what else in the first canto are there examples of Krishna serving or protecting his devotees? First canto. Yeah, I mean, Bhishma, I mean, just the fact that Krishna appears personally when he's leaving this world, that's certainly a sign of Bhaktivatsal, right? And with Kunti Devi, first of all, accepting the prayers and then staying a little bit longer for Yudhisthira Maharaj, right? And then protecting Parikshit Maharaj, you know? And then if you go through, I'm not so clear about the second canto. Third canto, there's Dhruva? Is that right? No. Vidur, in the third canto, right, and then fourth canto. Dhruva Maharaj, and there's others also. Fifth canto, anyway, if you go through sixth canto, Ajamil, right, and then and if you just go through the, of course, seventh canto, Prahlad, etc. If you go through the Bhagavatam, you just see again and again and again and again and again and again, Krishna is protecting his devotees. Krishna is demonstrating his love for his devotees. So obviously one of these conclusions we're supposed to really have very much in the forefront of our consciousness after we've read the Bhagavatam is that Krishna is Bhaktivatsal. Krishna loves his devotees and protects his devotees. So we remember Krishna's power, remember his care for his devotees. Then we turn to the problem at hand and we declare our full surrender and dependence on the Supreme Lord. And we take shelter of hearing, we take shelter of prayer. Of course, naturally, we take shelter of chanting. These are, it's very interesting in Vrindavan, we have the good fortune to often serve devotees who are leaving this world, right? Because they often come to Vrindavan to leave this world. And of course, now by the mercy of Giriraj Maharaj and the Bhaktivedanta Hospital, there'll be even a much, much better facility to do that. But the thing that always strikes me that when we go to a devotee's room, you know, what do we do? Right? We don't tell them, you know, the latest gossip in ISKCON or, you know, this managerial decision. They take shelter those essential elements of Krishna consciousness, right? Usually Indra Prabhu comes with his kirtan party and there's a kirtan, right? And I had the great fortune of being there when His Holiness Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj left this world in Gita Nagari, and one devotee was holding a Govardhan Shila, I believe, to his head, and of course Radhanath Swami was right there with him, and so the devotee association, you know, Giriraj, Tulsi Devi, you know, so these are the essential shelters that we really have. But when we're kind of healthy and running around a lot, we may sometimes forget about those essential shelters that we have. Then after shelter of the process is the point about faith, that we're actually asked by the Lord to trust that we're not alone, we're not abandoned, we're not forgotten. And that living by one's faith is an intentional, aggressive, proactive exhibition of our will, we could say, of our free will. So therefore, we walk by faith and not by sight.
Yes.
Okay. Then we talked about timing. That Krishna has a different watch than us. Right? And that we have to accept his mercy according to his timing and wait for him. And that time is generally a factor in anxiety. And then finally, we spoke about practical steps to make. That what is practical in difficult times, that we first commit ourselves to Krishna's will and surrender to his merciful desire. And then we check our motives. Our contentment, if we're doing this to just become self-content and free from anxiety, or actually doing it to become closer to Krishna and drawing strength and stability from him. And then prayer. And then the time factor, and have we given Krishna enough time to answer our prayers and carry out his plan? And then finally, we ask the final question, can I remain surrendered to Krishna and dependent upon him as I act? Okay, so that's a review of yesterday. So now, brokenness. Brokenness means just when there's nothing left to take shelter of but Krishna. You've been proven so clearly that your abilities, your strength, your this, your that is fully insufficient. And also that we sometimes go through brokenness in our lives. That when our dreams, we may carry with us some certain dreams about what we want to pursue in life. When they're broken, there's some great lessons to be learned. Bari Jampu uses the word gold, but that gold is not easy to acquire. The process is unavoidably painful with no shortcuts. Jai. This is the good news. Brokenness may be the greatest lesson learned in this whole process. Brokenness is that ability to stand before Krishna and others open-handedly, no longer preoccupied with ourselves, our abilities, or even our ambitions. Broken people have stopped making demands how things must happen. They leave themselves available for Krishna to do anything he pleases. They are surrendered. They are accepting and dependent. This attitude brings a tremendous intimacy in our relationship with Krishna. So this surrendered kind of brokenness often arises from years of unfulfillment, frustration, disappointment, and having let go of one's dreams of how and when Krishna should act. One is detached from one's own plans. This type of surrender has trust in Krishna even when things happen differently than expected. I'll just read a few more. When our dreams remain unfulfilled, Krishna often is asking us to fully and actually renounce our attachment and desire to them forever. In this detached state of mind, we are free to receive what he has for us. That degree of faith and trust may be the fruit grown from broken dreams, right? So in other words, adjusting according to Krishna's plans for us can bring such an intimacy with the Lord. Why? Our dreams, not all of our dreams, because we know many of us, we have dreams about preaching, or Prabhupada had certain dreams to, like with his Juhu land or with Mayapur. That's a different thing. Our dreams are often, for folks like us, born of or are contaminated with false ego and self-centeredness. Sometimes these contaminations are subtle and unnoticed. So we are therefore required to trust Krishna's discretion and accept his will as the best thing for us. So are we willing to trust Krishna when what he ordains is different than what we desire? Are we willing to offer him our plans, even those for service? The difficulties of the journey should not be mistaken for the absence of Krishna's compassion. He is there whether or not we perceive him. I saved kind of the heaviest stuff for last. This is profound, isn't it? Some examples in the Shastra of brokenness, of people who just yes, Shamana. The Avanti Brahmana. Nice. Could you just say a sentence or two about that, about him? No money, no relatives. He suffered so many insults, people passing urine on him. And he was just at the mercy of the Lord. Nice. Another example from the Shastra? Draupadi. Yes, the Draupadi program. Because we're usually, you know, doing this, right? Holding on with one hand. That's our program, right? Yes, Draupadi. Arjuna defeated by the cowherds. Okay. Narada Muni in his past life, his mother passes away. And he's left with nothing. Dhruva Maharaj. Is that what you said? Dhruva? Dhruva Maharaj? Okay. Who? Yeah, that's what I was thinking of. Bali Maharaj. Yeah. Right? Just everything. Finished. So this is a number of examples. Just in a few minutes. And I'm sure if we spent a little more time, there would be more. So Krishna is showing Brahma. When with Brahma? Oh, after being humiliated, yes, Brahma. Indra would be probably a pretty good one also, yes. Jatayu. Yeah, so here we go. So we could probably go on for the rest of the class thinking of examples of this. So it does seem to be something that applies in the lives of great devotees. And if Krishna is very kind to us, it may apply in our lives also. Right. So that's brokenness. And then finally, that us going through difficult situations is not a one-time program. Am I glad I got rid of that, I got through that. Like chicken pox, right? Once you get chicken pox, you don't have to have chicken pox again. Right? Is that right, all the doctors at Bhaktivedanta Hospital listening to this? So it's not like that. It's not like that. It's an ongoing process. Just a few short points about this. That surrendering in this way should be continuously reoccurring. Results generally do not come in a once and for all fashion. So the peace offered to us by Krishna also offers protection and warnings. When that peace recedes, goes away, we should recognize that as an indication that we need more shelter. Thus, ongoing turmoil offers an opportunity for more dependence and intimacy. So it's like with the Pandavas. It's not like they just suffered one thing, right? They suffered so many things. Even Bhishma, right? He was like, what's going on? And how can this happen to such pious people? Right? So there's another example, the Pandavas. Yeah. Okay, so some questions and comments. Yes, Prabhu. Is there a microphone?
You spoke about this brokenness. Ultimately, we have to obey the plans of Krishna. But there are two things that you endeavor your full effort and sincerely, and then everything fails. Then you accept Krishna. This is what Krishna wills, and don't become depressed. But sometimes we try half-heartedly we try, or we don't try it full efforts.
Uh-huh.
And then we end up in frustration. So now we can't just think that this is Krishna's plan that I failed. Right. And we can't come out of that depression, or, you know. So at that time, the brokenness, how one can just leave it to Krishna and uh-huh. be peaceful and shelter of Krishna.
So if I think I understand your point, it's a matter of honesty. Is it if we're really, really trying our best and giving our full enthusiastic participation in seva, and then if that doesn't pan out for some reason, we can take that as Krishna's mercy. But if we kind of like, you know, oh, I went to the train station to distribute books, I fell asleep on the bench, and I didn't distribute any books that way, Krishna's mercy. Right, the Sankirtan leader might think something different, right? So, yeah. So, I think what we're talking here is that kind of what you were getting at. Yeah. So, yes, this is obviously talking about a certain level of honesty in our service. And I was thinking as you were talking, I was also thinking that if we're very, very intelligent, we can be broken without having to necessarily always go through the Krishna having to arrange that, right? We can just really understand, you know, first of all, Sambandha Gyan very clearly, what our relationship with Krishna is, what our relationship with the material world is, right? And then Abhideya, the process of how to, and just by the example in the Bhagavatam and the example of great devotees, we can go before the Lord in a broken state, sort of broken, you know what I mean, in that state of full surrender, or without him necessarily having to crush us. Is that all right? Yeah. What else? Yes, Prabhu. Behind you.
Hare Krishna. Prabhuji, I always face this problem. For a devotee who understands this verse, he can understand that whatever Krishna does is good for us. But when a person comes into Krishna consciousness, before that he has some conditioning also in his life. And for those devotees who are very successful in their material life, and because of that very success in their material life, they have a very strong determination, and with that determination, they have achieved the success. And that same determination is helping them in their Krishna consciousness to follow some regulatory principles very strictly. That is helping their Krishna consciousness very nicely.
Yes.
But in due course of time, that determination itself makes that devotee so fixed up in some thoughts, in some process, in some path. And that sometimes Krishna smashes us so badly that you become shaken up with that determination itself also. In that circumstances, this verse sometimes becomes a very frightening thing in our life, and we become shaken up that what to do in that circumstances. So can you just elaborate how a devotee should do it? Because those things which he had in his past conditioning, that is to some extent has helped his Krishna consciousness, and now those same thing is becoming an impediment to his Krishna consciousness, because that's genuine humility of coming and bowing down to the Lord
is not coming up in his true Krishna consciousness. Mm. So what a devotee should do in that circumstances to make his spiritual life very smooth and bow down thoroughly in his heart?
Well, very smooth, maybe not so easy. Depends on Krishna. You made a few points there. Because you made a differentiation between a new devotee, right, and someone who's been practicing for some time, right? And like you said, they bring that determination with them. That's fine. Just like Krishna says in Gita, tasmat sarveshu kaleshu mam anusmara yudyacha, right? So Krishna was telling Arjuna, yes, Yudhya, yes, you perform your occupational duty. You're good at fighting. Do it. But he says, before you do that, right, Mamanusma, remember me. That was one verse that came to my mind as you were talking. Because we do use our nature in Krishna's service, right? If someone is just like SKC Prabhu, that's what you usually refer to him, right? So he has a particular nature. For example, he's very good at dealing with big people in the government and things like that. So why shouldn't he use that? You know, sometimes he does things that you couldn't even imagine others being able to do. So why not use that in Krishna's service? And so someone's a good speaker, someone's a good cook, someone's a good pujari, and things like that. So we do that. But there does also, as we advance, often come a time when Krishna, like with Arjuna. Arjuna was doing all this his whole life. But then at the end, there was another lesson to be learned. And that's when he lost all of his powers and realized that his ability to be that unbelievable Kshatriya that wasn't connected necessarily or ultimately with his devotion to Krishna and his giving him the ability to go back to Godhead. So that's, I don't know if that happened. So when someone's coming to Krishna consciousness, we encourage them to use whatever expertise they have in Krishna's service. Like you said, if they're a very determined person, in the business world, bringing that determination to Krishna consciousness is great. That's great. But there will be a lesson sometime by Krishna's kindness to that devotee to show him or her that that determination is not enough. I think it was Shruti Dharma Prabhu when he gave class the other day where he said to act as if everything depends upon you and pray as if everything depends upon Krishna. Right? So that's our general understanding. Of course, at the very end, ultimately, everything depends on Krishna. Does that help at all? Or did I not answer your question sufficiently?
I would like to know very clearly is that when a person is having those qualities and he's using in Krishna's service to some extent, and he's attached to that quality because he's helping his Krishna consciousness, but sometimes those quality itself becomes an impediment in Krishna consciousness because this verse is clearly claiming us nothing works out but just to bow down to Krishna.
Right.
That time it becomes really, really difficult to bow down and maintain his Krishna consciousness.
Right.
Like that circumstance is what a devotee is supposed to do.
That's what I was trying. I guess I didn't do a very good job, but I was trying to, it's almost like different shlokas for different folks. Right? So in the beginning, there's that, for example, in the Bhagavad Gita, Yet Kurosi, what chapter is that? 9? Okay. So Krishna says, whatever you do, whatever you offer, whatever you give away, all those things, do that as an offering unto me. And then Prabhupada in one lecture says that represents karma yoga. You're going to do it anyway, so offer it to Krishna. And that's good. And we encourage people coming to that. That's wonderful. Right? But as a person advances, then we quote the shloka before that. Right? Patram pushpam phalam toyam yome bhakti prachit. That now Krishna is saying, no, this is what I want. Not what you want to do, but this is what I want. A leaf, a flower, a fruit, or water. And he mentions bhakti twice. So there's different stages. Ado shadha tatha sadhusang. There's different stages in our devotional life. And we encourage people differently according to where they are. And that's one of the most important aspects of being a preacher. is to understand where a person is and help them take the next step. Right? Sometimes our preaching is more like, you know, a shotgun. You just kind of, you know what a shotgun does? It sprays out a big spray of shrapnel, right? And you just hope, you know, close your eyes and you shoot and you hope something hits. Right? So we just, you know, say a very general thing. But when we really get to know someone, we can be even more like a laser. We find out exactly what that person needs to hear right now, you know, in May 2007, that will help them take the next step and the next step and the next step. And so sometimes we may encourage a person to take too big a step when they're not ready, or we may encourage them to take too small a step when they're ready to take a bigger step. So that's the expertise of a... But Krishna will also help that person. He'll, as this class hopefully has, you know, that Krishna will lovingly impress upon that person at the right time that they need more than their material qualifications to go back to Godhead. Okay? Yes, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. We're talking about taking shelter of Krishna, praying to Krishna, and this is an ongoing process of surrender to Krishna. Now, sometimes it becomes relatively easier to approach Krishna and talk, and offer prayers and take shelter vis-a-vis devotees. Taking shelter of devotees seems to be more difficult than taking shelter of Krishna, because devotees might pull up our ears, they might chastise us. So how can we increase our surrender to spiritual master or authorities as we spend why I'm asking this question is because after some years, we also see the other side of devotees. Like, we might be serving them well, but when we're working together on some project or some services, you know, we might have disagreements and we have different idiosyncrasies. So how can we love and increase our affection, although we disagree with them on certain issues at the same time? So how can we balance this also along with taking shelter of Krishna?
Well, first of all, understand what it means to be a great devotee, right? It doesn't mean that there isn't, you know, some kind of, how should we say, like, material flaw. That's mentioned in the Nectar of Instruction, right? The one about the Ganga, you know. We have to understand what perfection is. That's also first really, really important, right? Just like somebody could say, you know, you hear Srila Prabhupada quote, Brahmanda Brahmite Kon Bhagyavan Jeev Guru Krishna Kripaya Pai. It's actually, that's not the right word, right? It's prasad, not kripaya. So then a person who doesn't understand what perfection, because he got the verse wrong, right? And you hear Prabhupada quoting that. But that's not, and Prabhupada talked about this with Jayadvaita Swami in Mayapur once, about what the perfection of a devotee is. And naturally, that perfection is that sincere desire to serve the Lord. It doesn't mean that they don't have a different opinion about you about something, or quote a verse wrong, or... A matter of fact, almost every great devotee has something that we could see in that way. So we have to really be very clear about what it means to be a devotee, right? It doesn't mean what we sometimes think perfection to be. So then, once we get past that hurdle, right, and so we see the other devotees in the ashram or in the yatra in a more realistic, or in a proper light, not realistic light, then it sounds like what you're saying is it's a question of trust, isn't it? Right? That if we trust someone, for example, if we say we're going through some difficulty and we, go up to Radha Gopinath Prabhu and you say, Prabhu, I'm experiencing this. And, you know, if it's on the internet the next day all over the world, then probably your trust level is going to go way down, and you're never going to, you know, then you say, well, I think I'll work this out with Krishna and forget about the devotees. But what's really important, especially because, you know, we have such a nice Brahmacharya ashram here, that we develop those trusting relationships. It's so helpful to our Krishna consciousness. There has to be problems. And so the more that we can go to a God brother, a God sister, and say, you know, my dear Prabhu, you know, I'm going through this, you know, what do you think I should do, or, you know, could you help me discuss this and walk me through this? That if the trust is there and the person is actually trustworthy, That is, you know, guyam akyati prishati. And that's so important in our Krishna consciousness movement to have those kind of relationships. We all need at least, you know, one or two or three devotees that we can just open our hearts to. It's not that it has to be everyone, you know, all 101 brahmacharis or what it is, or something like that. But it's often said that if one has a few good friends, really, really intimate friends in this world, they're very, very fortunate. So that is important, though. I think you could even say it's essential. In other words, that we, because what we've been talking about here a lot is opening our heart to Krishna, but it also has to be with Krishna's devotees. Is that all right? Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Difficult situations in Krishna consciousness Ki Jai.